On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Political rivals of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. They've had this nickname for him for a while now. The Mr. Dress-Up Prime Minister.
Here he is in Indigenous ceremonial dress. Here he is in Jewish attire.
Jesse Brown hosts the Canada Land podcast. He says conservative members of parliament, they'd even pass around Trudeau photos. He might be dressed like Superman or trick-or-treating as Han Solo, or just trying to fit in with a foreign dignitary.
Putting all these images together would get a chuckle across the political spectrum.
So when images surfaced last week of Trudeau in blackface and brownface, it was shocking. But after apologizing, Trudeau almost seemed to play it off. Like, hey, you know me. I'm the guy who gets dressed up.
Yeah, I think the specific thing you said was something like, I can be more enthusiastic about costumes than is sometimes appropriate, which is true. He is overly enthusiastic about costumes.
How many photos have come out at this point?
There are three photos and one video at this point. Two of the photos are from one event. So there's three different instances of him in brownface or blackface.
There's one video clip where Trudeau is wearing an Afro wig. In other photos, he's dressed up like Aladdin at an Arabian Nights-themed party for a school where he was teaching. He'd gone so far as to paint not just his face, but his hands, too.
And nobody else did it. You know, if you see the other pictures, there are like a couple of guys who wore, one guy wore a turban and somebody else wore a robe, but nobody else was wearing makeup. I mean, he really took this. He was a teacher. He was a teacher at a school-related event, and he took it really far. It's hard to see him the same way, and I think that a lot of people are looking at his default image as a statesman, as our young and well-dressed and well-coiffed and well-presented prime minister, and now you got to ask yourself if that too isn't a costume of sorts.
And the timing of these photos, for Justin Trudeau, it really couldn't be worse. When are the Canadian elections?
October 21st is when we go to the polls.
So when you think about these photos and the elections, does anyone have any idea what they're going to do?
It ain't good. It's it's something that the debate is how much will it hurt him?
Today on the show, Jesse's going to explain the scandal that has upended the Canadian election. Justin Trudeau helped change the political fortunes for his Liberal Party, but now he might change them again, and not for the better. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next. Stick with us.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
So we talked about Justin Trudeau a few months back. And at the time, you talked about how you've been covering Justin Trudeau for years. And in some ways, it felt like you kind of grew up with him around because he was a political heir. Can you explain a little bit just the place of Justin Trudeau in Canada for people who don't know?
Well, this has sort of been positioned. Canadian school kids learn about what is great about Canada is that we are multicultural, and who is sort of the father from a policy standpoint of Canadian multiculturalism? It's Pierre Trudeau. Now, Pierre Trudeau is not an uncontroversial figure. He was certainly presented as a hero to me growing up in Toronto. The emergence of Canada on the global stage of having this intellectual debonair prime minister, everything about him marked kind of Canada's entrance into the modern age. And Justin Trudeau is his son.
Pierre Trudeau served as prime minister for 15 years. When he first ran as leader of the Liberal Party in 1968, reporters called the fervor surrounding his campaign Trudeau Mania. In this tape, people are running alongside his car like he's a rock star.
So it's a similar situation. The Kennedy clan, the Trudeaus, this is Canadian royalty. And a good-looking guy who made his – there were a couple of sort of acts of political theater. I hate to be so crude, but his eulogy for his father was when a lot of people first saw him, you know, since they had seen pictures of him as a small boy. And then an act that he has since – described about as a political calculation, and a really curious one in this new context, when he, as a young member of parliament, had a boxing match with a conservative senator named Patrick Brazeau, who is Indigenous. Under the auspices of some sort of charity event, he has a boxing match with an Indigenous tough guy. A guy who was, known to be kind of a blue collar, working class roots. A guy who was thought of as a bit of a tough guy. And if he could best this guy in an act of like, you know, in the ring, he could change the way people feel about him.
You're right. He's from a tougher neighborhood than Pierre Trudeau's son, Justin. They are.
When you look back at that boxing match, he comes so close. Justin Trudeau, I mean, in his description. In painting his opponent as a savage. You know, he comes very close to that.
I think that without using that incendiary language, he basically described Brazeau as just that, as here is this this tough, you know, kind of like rough around the edges conservative Indigenous guy who if he can beat him in boxing, like I don't know what that matters in terms of his abilities as a statesman, but if he could beat up Patrick Brazeau, he could overcome this image that he's too soft, that he's pampered, that he's a daddy's boy with a silver spoon in his mouth. That is the political impact that had as theater, and it was deliberate.
It's interesting listening to you talk about this boxing match. It sounds like Justin Trudeau's strange relationship with race, it's kind of always been under Canadian journalists' nose, but it's like they didn't see it because it's been everywhere and nowhere all at once.
Well, look, I cover the Canadian media itself, and I am asking questions now. Like, there have been a number of professional people who have been paid money to vet Justin Trudeau. The Liberal Party would have wanted to know everything they could know about him to see if he was a flawed candidate. His opponents, other candidates running against him. So I don't know. And then, of course, the media itself in vetting a candidate. What do you do if somebody pays you to go and look through the person's past? One of the first things I would do is go through old yearbooks. How did we miss this? The contradictions of having somebody who is of such privilege, of a Canadian royalty political family, a white guy born into that who presents himself as such a progressive and an ally, while even before this happened, serious questions about whether or not that was all just for show or whether or not he actually in his policies was an anti-racist. In his policies, was he actually an advocate? And I mean, as the person occupying the highest elected post in this country, doing everything that he promised that he would and was able to do, even before this happened, that was very much in question.
Yeah, I'm reminded of that time he was giving a speech at a giant fundraiser and some protesters showed up from First Nations, Indigenous protesters, and he sort of dismissed them and very sarcastically. And it was one of the first dings on him.
Absolutely. That was a really revealing moment where the protesters had to, pay for whatever it was, for $1,000 a plate, I can't remember exactly, in order to attend, where they surprised everybody by protesting him. And as they were being led out of the room after piping up with their message of protest, he very smarmily and smugly said, "Thank you for your donation." That It left a bad taste.
So, you know, I read one piece of analysis that said that the real costume Trudeau has been wearing has been that of a woke white bro who we've all been waiting for. It sounds like you agree with that assessment.
I do. I think that people have, I think, a sophisticated understanding that everything in politics is performance to some degree. Certainly, he has fronted his wokeness and his progressiveness as part of the package. I think that's fine if you actually are that guy. I think that one perfect example of Justin Trudeau being about optics over substance is when the news of the of Trump's Muslim immigration ban hit. And everyone was just appalled. And it was so ham-fistedly applied and airports shut down. And everybody was just absolutely confused as to what was happening. And then there it was, this beam of light from Justin Trudeau's Twitter account saying, you know, if you are fleeing injustice, immigrants, refugees, Canada wants you. You're welcome here. It was the perfect thing to say. But it wasn't true. It was backed by nothing policy wise. Nothing had changed. That was not a tweet that was with relation to anything new that had happened. We were still involved a party to legislation whereby if a refugee came to America first, and America did not accept them their application as a refugee, we would turn them away as well. That didn't change. Anybody who was directly affected by the Trump ban would find no refuge. There was nothing that Canada was offering with relation to that that was helping them at all. And in fact, it actually put people in danger because there were people who had been in America who felt like, well, I believe Justin Trudeau, I'm going to cross the border on foot. There are people who lost fingers trying to do so in harsh weather, thinking that that actually meant something. It didn't mean anything.
It sounds like what you're saying is that part of the reason why these photos have been so inflammatory is that they've become supporting evidence for something that, for things that critics like you have been saying all along about Justin Trudeau.
Yeah. And it's bigger than Justin Trudeau because it's Justin Trudeau is an absolute personification of brand Canada. And brand Canada is that progressive wonderland, that utopian, boy, if America could only just make a few moves in the right direction, get rid of the guns, deal with the racism, it could be this wonderful place just like Canada. We're used as a rhetorical tool, and it is paper thin because there are currents of racism that are woven into the foundation of this country that are still at play every day, and we are so enamored with this brand of ours and with this reputation that there has been a lack of maturity and a lack of real political will and public interest in grappling with the actual reality that a lot of people face in this country.
So let's talk about how these photos are impacting the Canadian elections, because you're in the middle of a race to figure out who's going to be running the country. One candidate has really embraced talking about this. I'm talking about Jagmeet Singh.
When I responded earlier, I hadn't seen the image itself. And seeing the image, it jarred me.
Jagmeet Singh is the first person of color to lead a major political party in Canada. He's Sikh. After these blackface photos emerged, he spoke emotionally about what they meant to a man like him.
And I faced a lot of racism in my life, and I can be honest with you, I fought back when I faced racism. I fought back with my fists. But there's a lot of people that weren't able to do that. One of my friends told me how he wasn't able to do that.
He really was equal to the moment when this brownface story broke. And he initially released the kind of written response that you would expect in a politicized response, taking advantage of the moment, you know, to decry Trudeau. But then he went off script and faced the camera and just talked about how this isn't about Justin Trudeau. This is about how this actually is affecting people of color in Canada and kids, and how it affects him and how it makes him feel and what it reflects about the country itself. And it was a catalyzing moment. It was an important moment. And it was interesting to see Justin Trudeau's response. He publicly let it be known that he would like to apologize to Jagmeet Singh in person. And Jagmeet Singh, I think, handled that very well. He said, look, I'll talk to you, but I'm not going to be used as a political tool. It'll be behind closed doors and it won't be a media event for you.
So it sounds like Jagmeet Singh is kind of having a moment. Does his party, the NDP, have any chance of making gains in this upcoming election?
I think from where they stand now, all the polls indicate they're going to lose some ground. I think he's definitely making gains from where he was a week ago. I think that there's hope for his campaign yet. And, you know, he's in a strange position because there almost is a certainty are not going to, you know, he's not going to be the next prime minister. However, the way it works here is that if there is a minority government, they may need the NDP. If the Liberals form a minority government to actually form government, they may need participation from the NDP. They may need to form some sort of a coalition or some sort of a deal. Jagmeet has said he won't do that with the Conservatives because their politics are just too far apart. But he may hold the balance of power.
I mean, the argument of Justin Trudeau's Liberal Party is that if you don't vote for us, the Conservative Party will be in charge. Is that a real risk?
You know, Canadians are in a really miserable spot as voters, because if you are a Canadian who is offended by this, if you are a Canadian who feels like either this is an act of racism that affects you directly, or you feel any sense of obligation to care about other people in your community when you're making these decisions, or if you simply just feel like he's exposed himself as somebody who you can't really believe what he says about himself because he's presented himself as this incredible progressive anti-racist feminist character, you know, then this is just the latest in a series of disillusionments around that. But if you care about these things, then you're not going to like your other option, because the other person who has a chance of becoming prime minister is the Conservative candidate, Andrew Scheer. So the most likely outcome is that a lot of the people who showed up last time and surprised the pollsters, I mean, the Liberals were not looking good in the polls, and then they swept. It's because he got a lot of new people to come and vote. I really think that the vulnerability is just people who were so excited by this guy last time, just not bothering.
So who is the Conservative Party leader who could take over Canada?
I wish I knew. His name is Andrew Scheer.
When you say I wish I knew, do you just mean like no one knows him?
Yeah, I think that there's, even in terms of like familiarity amongst the electorate, that was a big hurdle for the Conservatives. The people didn't even know. You know, I mean, we follow American politics more closely than we do our own politics here in Canada. Like we listen to American political podcasts and we watch the American news. I mean, you know, Trump helps, but even before Trump, we are somewhat disengaged from our own political system. And Canadians like to talk about how boring it is up here and how that's a great thing. But anyhow, Andrew Scheer had very low name recognition. And even amongst those of us who know who he is, getting a read on him is quite difficult. I think that he is very deliberately set out on a strategy of not making waves. One of the biggest problems for any conservative candidate in Canada is to seem too conservative, especially socially conservative. So you need to kind of dog whistle and make gestures to, you know, the social conservative voters whose votes you need to let them know, I will represent you, but I just can't say, I can't really bring up things like abortion. Your issues are things that, you know, are going to, you can't form government if you go too hard in that direction. So Andrew Scheer has been running up, you know, brand bland in contrast with Justin Trudeau. And it's been pretty effective. If he could just sort of stand there and not make a fool of himself, that's probably his best shot.
Okay, so we have the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party, and it looks like one of them will be leading Canada's government shortly. Here's my question, listening to all this. There's no doubt that these photos of Justin Trudeau are not great for the Liberal Party. And you said earlier that really the Liberal Party is relying on people of color, people who hadn't voted before, who turned out last time for Justin Trudeau. And of course, seeing these photos puts those voters up in the air, potentially. So I guess my question is, why isn't the Liberal Party thinking of dumping Trudeau?
It's too late. You know, we're a month to the election itself. There isn't an obvious other contender. He still is, you know, the most famous Canadian, maybe shy of Drake. And I think that they're just going to, they're in too deep. They're just going to keep going and hope that something else takes over the news cycle and hope that ultimately, I mean, you know, it's really interesting and revealing to just read what is happening from Trudeau's supporters, who are now in this position of dismissing the relevance or importance of this repeated use of blackface. People who otherwise, I think, are kind of casually on side with anti-racism, casually on side with progressive politics. But when push comes to shove, they are willing to not only accept that he's done these things, but in a lot of cases, people are making excuses for him. People on the progressive side of things. And I think it's really divisive for Canada because we have a lot of people here who are not white and thought that they had allies and friends and supporters amongst the liberal establishment of Canada. And they're finding out that that only goes so far.
Jesse Brown, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you.
Jesse Brown is the host of the Canada Land podcast. And if you liked this interview, you're going to love his show. It's rollicking, skeptical, rigorous. We highly recommend it. Canada Land, the podcast. Check it out. All right, that's the show. What Next is produced by Mary Wilson, Jason DeLeon, Daniel Hewitt, and Mara Silvers. If you want to check out what I do during the day, go find my Twitter. I'm at Mary's Desk. I'm Mary Harris. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its authors' intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special 2-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.